Today we're venturing into what feels like maybe surprising territory, the really fascinating overlap between mathematics and language processing.
Absolutely. It's quite an interesting connection. The source you shared is a research proposal. It's called Priming Relationships in Syntax and Mathematics, or PRISM for short. And what's really intriguing, I think, is the core idea that how we understand structure in one, say math, might subtly shape how we process structure in the other
It's
language.
a wild thought, isn't it? Math, equations, rules, language, sentences, grammar, both built on structure. And these PRISM researchers are basically asking, can just being exposed to mathematical structure actually change how we interpret sentences?
Exactly. That's the central question.
Okay, let's unpack this idea of priming. What exactly is priming in this context?
So think of priming as a kind of a gentle nudge, maybe. The idea here is that if your brain just processed a specific kind of structural pattern in a math problem, it might be, let's say, more inclined to spot and use a similar pattern when it immediately encounters language.
So it's almost like you're warming up a particular pattern recognition circuit in the brain. The proposal mentions some previous work, right, with English speakers, cheapers, and others.
That's right, yeah. Back in 2011, 2014, they found evidence for this. Basically, showing people math equations structured, one way they called it high attachment, made those people more likely to interpret sentences with a similar high attachment structure.
And the same for low attachment.
And the same for low attachment, exactly. Low attachment math led to low attachment sentence
Okay,
interpretations.
that definitely makes me ask, what are high and low attachment in sentences? Can we break that down?
Sure. It really boils down to where we connect a new phrase in a sentence. Let's use their example. I visited a friend of a colleague who lived in Spain. Now, with high attachment, we link the phrase who lived in Spain back to an earlier part of the sentence, in this case, a friend.
Ah, okay, so the friend is the one living in Spain. It attaches sort of higher up the chain.
Precisely. It connects to that earlier noun phrase.
Right. So low attachment must be connecting it to the closer noun then.
Exactly. For low attachment, who lived in Spain, connects to the most recent noun phrase, a colleague. So in that interpretation, it's the colleague who lived in Spain.
Okay, that's clear.
And sometimes you'll hear these referred to as left branching for high attachment and right branching for low attachment. It's about how the structure looks if you diagrammed it.
Left and right branching. Got it. Okay, so this new study, the PRISM proposal, it takes this math-to-language priming idea and asks, does this work for bilinguals too? Specifically, English-Spanish bilinguals.
That's the core of it, yes. And they're not just asking if it happens, but how different levels of bilingual proficiency might play a role.
Ah, so how fluent someone is might change the effect.
Potentially, yes. Does more experience with two languages amplify this priming, dampen it, change it somehow? That's what they want to find out. And they've designed a two-phase study to explore this. The first phase is behavioral.
Okay, phase one. What happens there? Who's involved?
So they'll have a control group and an experimental group. And importantly, both groups will have the same mix of people: English monolinguals, Spanish monolinguals, and then Spanish-English bilinguals with varying degrees of fluency. Everyone starts off with a language background questionnaire, how much exposure have you had to your second language? When did you learn it? That kind of thing.
Standard stuff. Then what?
Then they all do this task involving ambiguous sentences, like our friend of a colleague example. These are sentences that can be interpreted in more than one way, grammatically speaking.
And you mentioned these are validated sentences.
Yes, they're drawing from established methods, like work by Queto and Mitchell back in '88. It's a known way to gauge people's default interpretation preferences.
Okay, so that's for everyone. What's the twist for the experimental group?
Ah, here's the key manipulation. Right before the experimental group sees each ambiguous sentence, they get flashed a math equation. Some equations will have that high attachment structure. Think like 80 minus 9 plus 1 times 5, where you'd naturally work left to right, sort of grouping the earlier numbers.
Okay.
Others will see low attachment equations, maybe using parentheses like 80 minus, then parenthesis, 9 plus 1, close parenthesis times 5. Here, the parentheses force you to group the later numbers first.
I see. So the math structure directly mirrors the sentence structure options.
That's the idea. They want to see if seeing that math structure immediately influences how the bilinguals and monolinguals interpret the sentence that follows, like a little structural nudge right before the main task.
Clever. Okay, that's phase one. What about phase two? You said EEG, measuring brain activity.
Exactly. Phase two zooms in a bit. They'll use a subset of participants. English monolinguals again, and then the Spanish-English bilinguals. But this time, they'll categorize the bilinguals based on their language proficiency, using the terms BICS and CALP.
BICS and CALP. Okay, we probably need to define those. They sound academic.
They are. They come from language acquisition research. BICS stands for Basic Interpersonal Communicative Skills. This is like the everyday language fluency you need for social situations, chatting, ordering coffee, you know, basic conversation. It develops relatively quickly.
Okay, the playground and coffee shop language. What's CALP?
CALP is Cognitive Academic Language Proficiency. This is the more complex language skill needed for, well, academics. Understanding textbooks, writing essays, debating abstract ideas. It's the language of schooling, and it generally takes much longer to develop, maybe 5 to 7 years or more in a second language.
Right, so a deeper, more analytical language skill. Okay, so you have BICS bilinguals and CALP bilinguals hooked up to an EEG. What are they doing?
They go through a sequence. First, they interpret those ambiguous sentences without any math primes beforehand. This gives a baseline reading. How do they normally process these sentences? What does their brain activity look like?
Establishing their default. Makes sense.
Then they interpret the same kinds of ambiguous sentences, but this time each sentence is preceded by either a high attachment or a low attachment math equation. Just like in phase one, but now with EEG recording.
Ah, so now you see the brain's reaction to the prime and the sentence together.
Precisely. And finally, they also interpret some straightforward, non-ambiguous control sentences. This just helps gauge their general cognitive effort for sentence processing when there's only one clear meaning.
Okay, so the goal of phase two is really about cognitive effort, using EEG to see how hard their brains are working under these different priming conditions, depending on their language level.
Exactly. It's looking at the neural signatures of processing, not just the final interpretation choice.
This is fascinating. The proposal also mentioned some previous work on bilingual processing, Dussies and Segarra. What did that suggest?
Right. Their work from 2007 suggested something quite interesting about baseline preferences. They found that Spanish monolinguals, and also bilinguals who hadn't had a ton of English exposure, tend to prefer high attachment interpretations for ambiguous sentences in Spanish.
So a default lean towards high attachment, connecting to the earlier noun.
Yes. But, and this is key, bilinguals who have had extensive exposure to English tend to shift. They start showing a preference for low attachment interpretations, which is more typical for English monolinguals.
Wow, so just using English a lot can actually reshape that fundamental parsing preference.
It appears so. Your dominant linguistic environment seems to influence your initial structural analysis.
Okay, so how does this new study predict that we'll interact with the math priming? Let's take the BICS group first, the ones with strong everyday English, but maybe less academic English. What are the hypotheses for them?
For the BICS bilinguals, there are a couple of key predictions. First, based on that prior work, they might actually show a tendency towards low attachment, even in the control condition, without math primes. Their everyday English use might already be shifting their preference.
Okay, leaning English-like already.
But, and this is interesting, the researchers predict these BICS bilinguals might show a stronger priming effect from the math equations compared to the monolinguals.
Stronger? Why would that be?
Well, perhaps their system is sort of more flexible or maybe more sensitive to structural cues because they're actively navigating two systems. Their developing sensitivity to English structure might make them more susceptible to this external structural nudge from the math.
So potentially more influenced by the math primes. What about their brain activity? The second prediction for BICS.
The prediction there is about cognitive effort. They expect BICS bilinguals to show greater cognitive effort, so more demanding brain activity on the EEG when they process sentences following the high attachment math primes.
Why high attachment?
The thinking is, if their Spanish background favors high attachment, but their increasing English use pulls them towards low attachment, and then they get a high attachment math prime, it might create more conflict or require more processing resources to resolve compared to a low attachment prime that aligns better with their English-influenced tendency. It's like pushing against their acquired current.
Okay, that's a neat prediction.
Yeah.
What about the CLOP group, the academically proficient bilinguals? What's expected for them?
For the CLOP bilinguals, the hypothesis suggests they might show the most pronounced priming effects overall.
The biggest effect of the math.
Yes. The idea is that because they have such a sophisticated understanding of both language structures, English and Spanish, they might be particularly attuned to these abstract structural parallels between math and language. Their metalinguistic awareness might be higher, making them more sensitive to the prime.
So their deep knowledge makes them more susceptible to the structural cue. And the second prediction for CLP, the EEG one.
This one's also interesting. They predict CALP bilinguals might actually show reduced cognitive effort when interpreting sentences following the high attachment primes.
Reduced effort. That seems counterintuitive compared to the BICS group.
It does at first glance. But their reasoning is that their deep, possibly more balanced knowledge of both languages, including the high attachment preference common in Spanish, might make processing a high attachment prime followed by a potentially high attachment interpreted sentence feel more congruent or efficient for them. They have well-established routines for both structures, perhaps.
Ah, so because they're comfortable with the Spanish-like high attachment structure, getting a high attachment math prime just makes processing that kind of sentence easier for them.
That seems to be the hypothesis, yeah. It suggests a really complex interplay between proficiency level and how these cross-domain structural links operate.
It's genuinely kind of mind-bending.
Yeah.
The idea that doing a quick sum, well, not even a sum, just processing the structure of an equation, could subtly shift how you parse grammar moments later.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it highlights how interconnected our cognitive abilities might be. The proposal also touches on the practical side of this.
Oh, like potential applications.
Exactly. The researchers suggest that understanding these connections could, down the line, inform how we design educational support, especially in math classrooms. If we know the brain processes structure in related ways across domains, maybe we could leverage that. Could understanding sentence structure actually help students grasp mathematical structure? Or could certain math exercises potentially strengthen language processing skills? It opens up possibilities for cross-domain teaching strategies.
Wow. So the big takeaway here is our brains are maybe not as compartmentalized as we think. There might be the shared system for understanding structure, whether it's numbers or words.
That certainly seems to be the implication they're exploring. Math and language might draw on some common cognitive architecture for dealing with rules and relationships.
And being bilingual adds this whole other layer of complexity and adaptation to how that system works.
Precisely.
It really leaves you thinking. I mean, if math structure can influence sentence understanding, what other seemingly unrelated things in our lives might be subtly connected in our minds?
That's the perfect question to ponder for you listening. Think about your own skills, your hobbies, your work. Are there areas you consider totally separate? Could the way you approach problem solving in one area or the patterns you recognize somewhere else actually be shaping how you think or act in another unexpected domain? What hidden connections might be lurking in your own cognitive landscape?
Definitely something to mull over. A fascinating deep dive today.